Welcome to The Sound of Economics, a podcast series by Bruegel's, a Brussels-based economic think tank. I'm Nicolas Véran. Today we are talking about a number of anniversaries because it's the 60th anniversary of the Élysée Treaty of 22nd of January 1963. But importantly for us, it's also the 20th anniversary, I mean yesterday, of course, of the meeting between Jacques Chirac and Gerhard Schröder in Paris in 2003, which is actually the official birthday date of Bruegel, or the embryonic conception of Bruegel. I don't know what metaphor is right, but that's when the project was first announced to the world, item number 30 of the declaration at the time. So we're celebrating 20 years of Bruegel in a way. We'll have more celebrations in 3 years' time, because 2005 is when Bruegel started operations. And it's also the fourth anniversary of the Aachen Treaty. Emmanuel Macron and Angela Merkel signed another treaty in 2019 on the same date with the same symbolism. And of course, yesterday we had the Joint Council of Ministers. So for commenting on all that, I'm very grateful to Cornelia Voll and Jean-Pisani Ferry for joining me today. Cornelia Voll leads the Hertie School in Berlin. Jean-Pisani Ferry and I were present at the creation of Bruegel, and Jean is now a senior fellow with Bruegel, among many other official duties. So I cannot think of a better way of celebrating the occasion, but also talk about and discuss the Franco-German relationship, which will be our topic today. So maybe starting with you, Cornelia, how should we think about the Franco-German relationship? 60 years now, what is its essence, the way you look at it?
Yes, thank you, Nicolas, for this question. I think, and we started with all the anniversaries, I think it's a very important relationship that is, of course, always repeated, and it's a difficult relationship because it's an unusual choice, in particular in 1963, to say we will have a special union and a special relationship among former enemies. It was still the context of the post-war period, where a lot of scars had not healed and where the main issues, maybe similar to the time quality currently we have, were focused on security and not so much just economics as a way of exchanging goods. So in this context, the decision to say we want to invest into Franco-German relations rather than just trusting on the French side, for example, the transatlantic ties, but also on the German side, was something that was a bit revolutionary. It wasn't that easy to push through. And when Adenauer and de Gaulle announced the Élysée Treaty, it was a strong signal that in a way was also instrumental, I think, in moving European integration forward. We're in a very different space today. We see that over the years, the main areas that the Franco-German couple was making advances on is economic and cultural integration, with lots of initiatives that I think have affected the lives of many people in France and Germany, but that have also been difficult because, in particular, on economic questions, there is a different interest. There are different ways of producing things. There are different stakes, and they had to be negotiated. And I think the declaration of Gerhard Schröder and Jacques Chirac proves just this. It's very hard to build Europe if we cannot at least pre-negotiate and come to an agreement among these two very important economies that are France and Germany, and that needs a space where thinking can happen prior to the political decisions. And I think that's the mission that Bruegel was given, and we still see that it's important today. We can talk about security in the second step, but I think that was the time quality of these years, and it's still clear that that is a relationship then of great importance and many frictions.
Jean, is the relationship still special?
The relationship is still special. I mean, it's strange that, you know, it was born when there were six members in the EU. Now we are 27. And, you know, they're still counting, obviously. And the Franco-German relationship is still matters. In my view, it does not matter because the two countries are the most powerful, but it matters because they are very different. And because on most topics, when you reach a sort of the start of an agreement between France and Germany, you're close to an agreement between the 27, especially now that Britain has left. So that's what makes things special. And you can think of, you know, you can think of of economics. You can think of the discretionary culture in France versus the Ordnungspolitik in Germany. You can think of the approach to markets with a sort of more dirigist approach in France and the more market friendly approach in Germany. You can think of foreign relation. You can think of trade. You name it, and on all these topics, you have the significant differences. And if you're able to bridge these differences, you're closer to a compromise. Now, the question to me is, will this characteristic survive? And I'm asking the question for two reasons. One is that the more the EU enlarges, and it will enlarge at some point, you know, towards the east, the more the central character of the Franco-German relationship, is in question. The other aspect is that we've seen periods of deep trouble in the Franco-German relationship. I mean, we can just go back to the Euro crisis, and we saw during this sort of 3 years how far France and Germany were from, you know, finding a common sound compromises. I mean, they sort of papered over their differences, but as soon as markets reacted, the differences reemerged. And it really took Mario Draghi, and it really took, you know, banking union to sort of come to a solution to this crisis. Essentially, with the 2015 European Council, you know, when the EU negotiated the whole night on whether Greece should leave the euro. So those are this is an example of, you know, how difficult it can be and how dysfunctional the Franco-German relationship can be for the EU. Now, we had immediately after that, or a few years after that, we had the COVID crisis and the sort of miracle of France and Germany coming to terms and agreeing on a template that few weeks or, you know, at least month later gave rise to the NGEU initiative. So we had this sort of, you know, very contrasting experiences. And my question now is, you know, what kind of phases are we in? Are we in a phase where difficulty, and there are difficulties, are structural, or are they cyclical in nature?
To that, but I'd like to come back to the origin and nature of the relationship. So, I mean, in a way, there's this tension between the emphasis on Franco-German relations, the transatlantic alliance, and European integration. De Gaulle famously was not keen on the transatlantic alliance, or at least with qualifications, and was also a Eurosceptic at core. So, Cornelia, how do you situate the relationship, both in its origins and in the way it has developed, alongside those two major developments, the transatlantic alliance and European integration?
I think, interestingly, exactly these tensions are still with us. And we see it maybe currently with the war in Ukraine. Let me talk about security. At one point, the position in France that was nicely summarized by Emmanuel Macron's statement that NATO was brain dead was that we needed to invest more heavily in European security by building our own capacities and having a more sovereign, whatever the varying qualifiers are, approach to security and defense. And this was something that the Germans just could not agree with, also because Germany, as we've seen now, had outsourced all of these concerns pretty much to NATO and the US to a point where we have no military capacity left. And it's quite striking to see how much this has been going down since the fall of the wall. So we see now, and in particular in this year, still an agreement, a baseline agreement, that it would be good to be more autonomous, more autonomous strategic autonomy in defense matters, military matters. We see that Germany certainly has made mistakes in this area in the past. We also see that France has been entirely unrealistic in its ambition for the challenges we're currently facing, because NATO clearly is not brain dead, and thankfully it was the one alliance that was able to bring some stability and coordination to the current stakes, which are still very high. And even if we say in the future we don't want to have to trust that the US is still going to be on our side in case there's another government, right now it's NATO that is most interesting to all the countries in Eastern and Central Europe, and not some sort of new Franco-German ambition that might be built in 20 years from now. So let me say maybe what I see and where I agree with Jean. We have right now moved more towards the East in many ways, in our attention, in our European construction as well. And Central and Eastern Europe have different expectations, both by looking at Germany and by looking at France, but in particular by looking at Germany. And this whole Franco-German special relationship is of an annoyance to the countries that feel that they've been let down by both countries, who had been too Russia friendly and not seen the concerns that these countries had raised for quite some time. So why is the time difficult? Because we still need to make sure that the Franco-German relationship keeps working for negotiating topics that are difficult. We still have tremendous challenges right now in Central and Eastern Europe, but also on other topics. And we still have the Transatlantic Alliance doing a lot of things for Europe that also cannot be forgotten. So people navigate with very similar tensions that I think we navigated, we had to take into account in 1963.
Well, Jean, I want to ask you, how fundamental is the shift, right? Because in a way, we have two different pictures. One is, in a way, nothing changes. We have the same issues as 60 years ago, transatlantic, European integration, French-German. We have all these different linkages. Another way to look at it is that there has been this tremendous shift eastwards, which is the enlargement, of course, with particularly Poland, which we haven't mentioned yet, but has become a large member state, even so it has its own issues with European integration these days. Brexit means less to the West. So now France is kind of the far west of the European Union. Well, Spain and Portugal and Ireland are further west, but that has shifted the balance and in a way made French less central, made Germany more central. And going forward, Ukrainian enlargement, which will be one more step on that same path. So how much is static, how much is dynamic? How do you look at the mental map?
I completely agree with what you just said. The shift to the East is structural, and we haven't seen, obviously, the end of it. I also think that, the addition of countries in the East that saw their future much more linked to NATO than to the EU. I remember it was about the time when Bruegel was conceived. I remember a seminar in Paris in which Bronislaw Geremek, the Polish historian and member of parliament, said very bluntly, the EU is a milk producers cooperative. Our community of value is NATO. That was shocking for a French audience coming from Geremek, but you know, there was some truth in it. And we think he was not a Eurosceptic, but we think, the legacy. Now, what I think is fundamental, and this is another part. The EU was in a way the brainchild of the US, of the Marshall Plan. It was, we should never forget that it was born out of not European initiative, but out of the U.S. response to the Soviet threat. And
it's completely true. The EU itself was a European initiative, no? And that the Americans sponsored and favored, but didn't completely conceive, or am I wrong in the history?
There was considerable sympathy for the EU and for the necessity of, organizing precisely the rapprochement between France and Germany, and building a community of states around it. And, the fact that Monet, having played the role he had played during the war and being so, close to the US, the fact that Monet was also the architect of it, I think he's telling. I'm saying that because I think what's happening now is that the world order, that was a sort of the broader world order that was also the brainchild of the US and, also as a response to the Soviet threat, is crumbling, is falling apart. And we have to face it. The global institutions are falling apart. the separation of economics and geopolitics is disappearing. The world is going through an accelerated de-Westernization process, and the U.S.-China rivalry is sort of structuring international relations. And with respect to that, I think France and Germany have, it sort of send them back, each of them, to their own, the way they see themselves, the way they see their roles in the world. And those are different. So the reaction to these changes are tearing apart. And I think that's structural. So that's why I think we should be careful about, you know, the nature of the responses. It's important to identify what's behind it. It's important to identify, for example, the respective roles of economics and defense. But, not to paper over again, but sort of to go sufficiently deep in the discussion so that we can understand what's going wrong or what threatens to go wrong and how to correct.
Cornelia, Jean gave a very stark picture of a crumbling multilateral order, basically the post-war order disappearing before our eyes with the rise of China. Is that the way it's seen in Germany? Can you give us a bit more of that color?
I agree with Jean on the current geopolitical analysis. I do think there was a little bit more European initiative in the creation of the European Union. And I think more of, you're right with Jean Monnet, I think of Robert Schuman and as one of the fathers also of the Franco-German relationship. But since we're not historians, let's look into the future. And let me say it this way. I do think that the current challenge really is the increasing rise of a liberal democracy or even outright authoritarian systems, which becoming more and more attractive and also dominant. If you look at trading relationships and if you look at just these country comparisons of the number of countries who are still liberal democracies. So if the world is breaking into one part, which is committed to a liberal market order with democratic systems, and another, which is not and has other ideals that I'll just summarize under authoritarianism, even though it's quite wide, and I include the liberal democratic systems as well, then the world can fracture, just like in the Cold War, into two different spaces, and that line will run right through Berlin once more. That's the fear, at least I have. I don't know if it's the German of me, but I do think that what in Germany currently is felt is that maybe also before, why was Germany so Russia friendly or so unable to see the threat coming from Russia for the Eastern neighbors? I think it's because Germany wanted to believe that it could heal its own country's divisions by bridging Europe from the East to the West, and by doing so in a way where Russia would be part of that bigger construction that had worked within the European Union and could just include, through this famous maxim, Wandel durch Handel, also the Russian Empire, and I'll call it this. And that was just outright wrong. But I still think Germany is quite cognizant of the responsibility it has in not having the world divided up once more as it was in the Cold War, and not wanting a wall going through the middle of it or going through some part of Poland, which also had a share of being divided in world affairs. So I think the more so than in France, Germany wants to hold the world together and is trying to do something that at least in Europe helps to bridge the East and the West. And right now the question is, how do you do that? And we're missing a master plan, that is for sure. There's the entire security challenge currently had broken down the idea that you can do it just through trade. Of course, there's a lot of very important trade relations now that Germany just summarizes under, we cannot decouple from China or other countries because of the way in which we've organized the economy, but also what infrastructure does it take to make sure you now hit the three ambitions we all want to have: distribute wealth in the best possible way, that's the economy, ensure your security in a way where we are all connected, and our energy provision, our data networks, our financial networks are a huge source of fragility, and make sure we change the way in which we produce energy so that we don't destroy the planet. And so that means the ecological transition, the security challenge, and the economic challenge are all connected. And that means we really have to rethink everybody's place, but also the German leadership role. And I think that's certainly something the Germans are grappling with currently. And it does affect how they look at the Franco-German relationship, which can always just solve small aspects of these big problems.
Cornelia alluded to the need for a master plan. Is it your impression that the French leadership or the French community more generally has a master plan? One issue that always comes back, of course, is security and the nuclear deterrent, and that's a debate that's older than I can remember. Has there been any evolution in your observation? You were active, of course, in Macron's election campaign in 2017. In the last decade or so, have you seen an evolution in the way French elites and government circles look at these fundamental issues?
I'd like first to react to what Cornelia just said about, you know, the destabilization that this crumbling global order represents for Germany and the response in France. I think, you know, the dependence on world trade of France and Germany is completely different. I mean, interestingly, 20 years ago, the two countries were not that different in this regard. I mean, openness rates were about the same. Now, over the last quarter of a century, things have changed entirely. Germany is much, much more dependent. And so the reaction, the spontaneous reaction in Germany is, you know, things are falling apart. How can we continue trading? Whereas in France, it's just the opposite. I mean, it's basically, you know, things are falling apart. It's time to sort of, you know, get rid of the dependence. And for example, in energy, it's very clear that the transition, it's not seen in the same way in both countries. I mean, Germany has the view, realistic or not, I don't know, but that renewables can be traded and that you can indirectly trade renewables through hydrogen. Whereas France has a sort of almost opposite plan of becoming completely autonomous through relying on nuclear. So those are sort of deep DNA-inspired responses to the situation. Now, on defense and the master plan, I think, obviously, this a dimension that always emerges when you start discussing in depth with German colleagues, which is, you know, what about defense and what about the nuclear deterrence and what about, you know, is it something you are possibly going to extend to Germany and to European partners or not? And what about also the decision to go at war, which is notoriously completely different in France and Germany? In France, you know, the president decided the next day you start bombing. In Germany, it has to go through the parliamentary process, etc. But I think those issues have resurfaced. They are becoming, you know, more topical. War is not a fiction anymore. And in this regard, I think, you know, we lack a sort of serious discussion on those issues between France and Germany. It's in the shadows, but it's not really taking place.
I agree. And maybe I'll say why I think this is. I think it is also very difficult to talk about the very big questions because Germany does not know how to talk about grand strategy, if I will call it this way. You asked if there is a master plan. I hope there is. I know that in Germany, there are no institutions to talk about a master plan. And the big recognition currently this year was, well, we need a strategy for energy sovereignty, for example. We need a strategy for raw material sovereignty or provision. We need to tackle certain questions. The Foreign Affairs Ministry is currently writing at least two national strategies. And you have all these plans popping up, but not the institutions where you can really then put together the different sectors of the government and or of society and work this out. Also because federal system and it's very complicated to put people around the table. It's not just a very centralized presidential system. Whereas in France, you have a Security Council, you have a much more strategic vision of engagement, both militarily and economically speaking. So that's an advantage for France. But how do you then bring that around the table on the Franco-German side. And we see it's very difficult. We the energy is the most difficult discussions currently because of the nuclear question that the two countries just cannot agree on. Defense is very difficult. And if you then say, and unfortunately, defense and energy is connected, how do you even structure an exchange on this, to me, is difficult. So the way forward is to go down one level. The flight at the level of flight height has to be more operational. We know that by working together, we get better at solving not just our own problems, but also developing institutions that might work for the rest of Europe if we can take our partners along. We have to make sure that the Franco-German cooperation doesn't just address the questions of their two countries, but also of the rest of the world, the rest of Europe, first of all. And that is a difficult exercise because on some issues, Jean was insisting a lot, and I agree with him, France and Germany are very different. But on some dimensions, France and Germany are alike, but very much different from the rest of the smaller European countries that don't have as much fiscal capacity to invest and do other things that both France and Germany can do. We'll see this now with respect to competition policy, for example. So it's quite important also that France and Germany, as they work out their differences, thinks of how to take everybody else on board with them if we want solutions for the future of the world to come out of Europe as a continent.
Maybe to end on a happier note, I'd like to come back to an episode which Jean has alluded to, which looked a little bit miraculous when it happened 3 years ago, and that was a decision to go for Next Generation EU, which was first announced indeed in a French-German format in May 2020. I would be very interested maybe to conclude on that. What are the lessons that the two of you, starting with you, Cornelia, have drawn from that episode? What has it demonstrated in terms of how the system works and what the role of the French-German relationship in that system? Because that was quintessentially a European decision at the end, but with a very strong, at least ostensibly, Franco-German catalyst.
Yes. Let me be even happier in the note. I'd like to list a couple of miracles because I think there's more than just one miracle, although I think that is quite outstanding. But if we list some of the achievements of Franco-German cooperation, I think EMU is part of it. It was very unlikely, not at all without tensions and did get achieved. So we had economic and monetary union. We had a euro crisis, yes. We had the terrible discussions you discussed, but the euro did not break apart. I think that's also a small miracle, and I'll just put it up there. We had a financial crisis that was also very difficult, but we ended up with something afterwards, which was at least banking union, even if there are still many things to do. And then we came through the COVID crisis with Next Generation EU, which absolutely nobody saw coming, and which happened in a context, I'll sometimes cite this, where the Franco-German meetings could not take place because of the pandemic. So the miracle happened, even though a lot of the instruments we thought were necessary for these miracles were not in place. My lesson from this is that under great pressure, intensive work, and with the political will to build something together, miracles can happen, and some projects can be achieved. It's not easy. And what we currently see is certainly a lot of the tension that happens around a time that is very difficult. We have a war going on very close to us. By the way, I think it's also a miracle how quickly the EU came together and agreed on sanctions in a period where we would have expected everybody to bicker over their own risk assessment, but we didn't. So in times of crisis, Europe has the energy to put their heads together, and that's what the institutions of the Franco-German cooperation are important for. We get over our difficulties. We know how to argue with one another productively to come to the small spot where some advances can be made.
I wish I could be as optimistic. I agree with many things that Cornelia said. I'm still worried by the current state of the Franco-German relationship. And, just to take the example, I mean, in principle, the energy crisis should have led us to sort of, find common ground, invest in the diversification of supplies. I mean, security of supply is a European public good. Why is it that it took so long to agree on a compromise? I mean, I think again, I mean, it's good to build on successes. It's also good to draw lessons from periods in which we went really to the sort of the edge of the precipice before we decided that, you know, the cost was too high. And I think we perhaps at a time when we should reflect on the latter rather than the former.
Thanks a lot. We could discuss for much longer, but this is all the time we have for this episode. As usual, you can read in open access all the analysis by Bruegel Scholar on the website www.bruegel.org. Cornelia, Jean, thanks a lot for joining this conversation. Thanks to all the listeners for joining the Sound of Economics. Happy birthday to the Élysée Treaty. Thanks, Mr. de Gaulle. Thanks, Mr. Adenauer. To the Franco-German Declaration 20 years ago and the creation of Bruegel. Big thanks, personal, to Mr. Chirac and Mr. Schröder for that, for all their sins. And congratulations to France and Germany for having kept the miracles going, to echo what Cornelia said, despite all the headwinds. Until next time, bye-bye.